89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. I'm Tom, this is Lotus. You guys know how all of this goes. You're here all the time, just like we are, except for last week, because Lotus and I were not feeling so good, so we decided to take the week off instead of, you know, sneezing and coughing into our microphones for
an entire hour. Of the plague of Perryite.
Yeah, Perryite decided to visit both of us, but we're doing better now, and this week we are talking about five of the nine, I'm going to call these lost gods, because we alluded to it before when we were talking about Athelia. She is one of the nine Coruscations. Coruscation. It's a weird word. She's one of these, and there are others. There are eight others. We're going to cover about the first five, maybe, in this episode. We'll see how far we get.
And then we're going to cover volume one, volume two. We're going to try to do volume one, and then try to do volume two, because there's no way we can get through all of these in one episode.
Right. And so you might be wondering, okay, what are these Coruscations? Okay, so I decided, that's a really interesting word. What does that actually mean? Turns out, coruscation is a noun that means a sudden flash of light or a striking display of brilliance. For example, you might describe a painting as having coruscation if it has vibrant colors that seem to jump off the canvas. Now, this is all related to Magnus. Magnus, if you remember, is one of the deities from the beginning of time who decided to help with the creation of the world and then totally noped out.
I was going to say, and then totally peaced out right through the sky.
Right through the sky to Aetherius, left a hole in the sky, and then his followers slash children, maybe they're both, maybe they're one or the other, who really knows, decided to leave also. They left the little stars in the sky. So it makes sense that you have this source of light, and these nine specific coruscations are other points of light that were involved with something having to do with the creation of everything. And we're going to get into exactly who they are and what they might actually have to do with anything, because they're very different in specific regards from Aedra or Daedra. They're kind of their own thing. And this isn't a unique thing to Elder Scrolls. There are other deities and powerful beings that are somehow other things. But these have kind of a specific place, but they're super cryptic. And so we're going to try to figure out and reveal to you everything we can about who they are and what this actually means. Does that sound like a plan, Lotus? Is that a good summary?
Yeah, this is going to get this is definitely going to be one of the weirder episodes. So
yeah, and that's saying a lot for us.
Yeah, well, every now and then we tackle a subject that is, it's in the series, but it's never really that prominent in the series. And this is really a perfect example of that.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them do come up in certain places in the series, and so they get referenced. So they are foundational. They've been around. It's not like this is something they made up for ESO in order to explain, like, you know, Athelia or something like that. No, these have been around.
Exactly. Like, Athelia only took place in ESO as of the moment. This was not like something that is just like, because I know some people aren't, you know, don't really ascribe to being interested in ESO. That's fine. But this is one that it's not just relegated to the most recent game.
Right. And even Aethelia already existed as the last of these Coruscations who didn't have a name and was only known as the White Star.
It just wasn't elaborated on. Right. Exactly.
So she was the White Star. Go back, listen to that episode. Check that out if you're interested. But each of these are kind of a colored star. And let's start. They all have these weird hyphenated names, like Nemo Lee is the first one on the list. M-N-E-M-O-L-I. And this is the one of these first five that we have the most details on. And so there's this very fairly large article in the UESP that kind of goes into who she may, they might be. I don't know if I can even say she. Some of them are referred to as princesses, like this one is she. But you, these cosmic beings tend to be whatever, you know.
Pretty fluid in general, as they're all Daedric princes when we refer to them. And then it's like
right.
One of them's a potato crab and, you know, sometimes they're male, sometimes they're female. It's all whatever.
Who even knows? So, yeah, all right. So let's get into it, because what I want to do with each of these is read the passage that comes from the Nine Coruscations by the Star Queen Viralius. And this is a list of the star orphans. This is another name they go by. And at the beginning of this, it says, "Let it be known that these sacred sisters followed the parabolas that led away from Magnus, and in doing so, chose to let their light continue to shine upon us." So it's as if Magnus decides to leave creation, and they trail off and remain somehow. And they're also described as children, as daughters of Magnus. And so they, in some ways, you can conceive of these as aspects of Magnus that remained, even though Magnus continued on. You can think of them kind of like that. And this is all stuff that was not described somewhere else. These are a lot of theories that I've come up with in order to try to explain what you're about to hear. So here we go.
Right.
Yeah. So, and you might come up with different explanations. I'm obviously not the be all end all of lore and knowledge. And this is all very vague to begin with. So I'm going to give you my thoughts. And if you have other thoughts to add to this, we'd love for you to comment and let us know. Maybe we can discover together as much as possible. So let's start with Nemo Lee. And just like the one about Aethelia, there's all these gaps in the text. So I'm going to say space or pause or something when we get to these gaps. So you can tell that there's words missing. And it's sometimes it might be one word. Sometimes it might be entire passages. We have no idea. So it says here, the blue star, the reclusive princess, gap, retroactively constructed by the, there's a space there, named her memory, appears when the dragon, space, untime, space, frozen moments of unfettered destiny, space, unbound time gives way, space, dragon break, space, as it was in the dawn, space, endless possibility, space, rewritten narratives, space, even the Elder Scrolls, space, always there is born a prisoner unbound, space, as is the will of the prime, space, there is no right lesson learned alone. Now, as I said before, this is very cryptic and there's lots of gaps in here, but I think we can kind of put something together. Lotus, do you have any kind of initial reactions to any of the things that were mentioned in this? It's pretty deep.
Yeah,
and vague. Yeah,
there's a lot to this, especially when it starts. I mean, again, a lot of this is separated in very, I don't want to say specific ways, because it's actually not, it's kind of erratically separated at points. But if we're involving dragon breaks and Elder Scrolls theoretically as an actual involvement in this, mm-hmm. This is a lot of metaphysical stuff.
Yeah, which yeah. A lot of these are, I think you're onto something there. A lot of these are very metaphysical. I think the blue star, Nemo Lee, represents the kind of the chaotic unboundness of the early universe, of the early Mundus, I guess you could say.
Right.
And she kind of represents the potential of possibility for anything to happen. It talks about how dragon break as it was in the dawn, before the dawn era, in the very dawn of everything. The dragon breaks are very similar to the way it was early on, where things were not constrained by time and order. Anything could happen. Everything could happen at the same time. There was a certain chaoticness that led to a certain potential. It mentions here the prisoner unbound. the prisoner is the one who can define and change the future, right? And so an unbound prisoner leads to chaotic potential. Anything could happen. There is no right lesson learned alone. By itself, nothing happens. But when other creatures and other beings come into existence, all of a sudden things can occur and things move in a specific direction. It even mentions even the Elder Scrolls. We know that when you get your hands on an Elder Scroll, it kind of drives you insane because you can see the way the world kind of works fundamentally underneath it all, right? Like there's this.
Right. And, yeah. And even them as like physical things aren't even always where they appear to be, like,
right.
Again, there's reference to when they're in the in various times when they're trying to count them, they're uncountable because they'll go back and there'll be a different amount of them.
Right.
So yeah. It's like even then, I mean, it's a weird situation where like it's nothing is really concrete. And actually, I don't know if you're about to bring it up. Rob in chat brought up something, a very interesting use of the word parabola in relation to this. Mm-hmm. Where again we're kind of like bending things in a way that it's like, okay, well they're meeting up, but then it's like it's a so much of like time in this is like more of a curve than a straight line, so yeah, it's kind of an interesting way of looking at that as well.
Yeah, I also like it says untime in here. It says frozen moments of unfettered destiny, like potential. Unbound time gives away dragon break. I think all of these are some sort of foundational piece of the nature of existence in some way. And so she represents all the stuff that I just mentioned, but there's that connection to like Akatosh, this idea that like this, she is what came before Akatosh bound time into a specific order and direction, but she also reemerges during things like dragon breaks. She's underlying all of it and is part of the foundation of even allowing Akatosh to do what Akatosh is going to do. So,
I know it's a weird concept, but it's almost like there's the restriction of a timeline, for lack of a better word, and she's out or it's outside that timeline, where sometimes you'll see it again. Like if the timeline breaks, then they reemerge. Very weird.
Yeah, and if the high elves, or at least some of the high elves, have their way, then we're going to get back to
this version of reality. This is the end goal,
right? This is the end goal, is to have the blue star reemerge as the only thing in some ways. So there are individuals in the series that do reference Nimu Li in some way. So for example, Sashar, who is a Sentrot Khajiit in Whispering Claw and a monk, was a scholar who researched Nemoli, which is a different name for Nemo Lee. It's all just kind of squished together.
You gotta keep into mind always one thing I love the series does is the regional dialects for things, regional names. So it's like sometimes you'll say something and it'll be very similar.
The Khajiiti kind of name, right? And then this is interesting. Mankar Cameron in the Third Era, and there's rumors about an Oblivion remake coming out, so we might have to go revisit some of that stuff.
Still waiting to see.
Yeah. And if Lotus, if we do get an Oblivion remake, we're gonna be doing a bunch of Oblivion lore for a while.
Yeah, we're going to need to.
Absolutely.
Which would be great, because then we wouldn't just have the Oblivion remake, we'll also have Sky Oblivion. So it'll just be an Elder Scrolls 4 overload.
Yep. Smorgasbord. But here, let's talk about Mankar Cameron. Mankar Cameron of the Third Era mentioned Nemo Li in his commentaries on the Mysterium Xarxes, where she is said to, quote, run blue through noise and shine only when the earth trembles with the eruption of the newly mantled. Interesting, the mantling of another god, that chaotic potential that then coalesces into them being a god and taking over that role.
Becoming the new Daedric Prince or god. I mean, I assume you can probably mantle a lot of things in the series. I mean, they don't only really reference Daedric Princes, but I mean, I think it would seem plausible you could do it otherwise, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. He claimed that in order to ward against them on, one should invoke, go, Gartok al-Nim, God is come, Numi Mora, Num Dele Nim. According to him, Numali, together with other Magnagi as a whole, were responsible for creation of Mehrunes Dagon in the bowels of Lig. So they had some clearly they're behind the creation of everything, but it would, I would, if you think of them as being these primordial aspects of creation, then it makes sense that they would also be behind creating the Daedric Prince that might also destroy creation and return it to its primordial state.
Right, because again, we've made reference to this before, that part of creation usually is a form of destruction as well, because then it can recreate. So it's, Dagon's more complex than just Dagon Smash, even though right. That's kind of like what most people will see.
yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes he was created for a reason. It's not just to smash. I mean, it's to smash, yeah, but to smash really good.
Right,
really good.
Right, really, really pulverize it so that we can start over and grow something new.
Right, right. All right, so let's move on to the second one. The second one is called Shiza Rana, and the second through the fifth one we get less details on, so there's going to be more speculation here.
Yeah, we started with the most detailed of volume one, for yeah, sure.
There you go. So hold on. The Cyan Star, the space of water. Now notice the first one was the reclusive prince. This is the first one to get some sort of like elemental aspect, water. The rest of them also have elemental aspects. The space of water, the sprightly lyre. She brings a period of rest after the break, a calming moment between storms, said to promote relaxation. The daylight's vitality, space erased, space, the shadow of space, teaching the youth the varied triumvirate roles to be retaken, wisdom of space, how the story has unfolded before. There's a big gap here after that period. There at the cradle of devotion, creativity, space, as fuel, space, energy that uplifts. Even if she, space, peace and tranquility, space, without harmony and balance, space, until Azura opens the third eye, space, clarity, foresight, intuition, space, mystery, memory, and the unknown. What do you gather from this one, Lotus?
Woof.
Yeah, these are tough. These are tough.
So, all right, there's a couple points that I can pick out from that, which I found interesting. I'll go with that, and then you can go in your direction.
Sure, yeah.
The couple notes that I found interesting about this one is, one, when we were originally reading this, I actually did not know the definition of triumvirate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, triumvirate. That's an issue. That's definitely one of the points I want to talk about.
I literally didn't know that before I read these prior to the show. And it's a reference to basically three men holding power. It's like a Greek definition. It's
the Romans. The Romans. There were times in the Roman Empire, there were three emperors simultaneously.
Right.
And they would all control power. It's part of where the founders of the United States got some of their ideas about divided government.
One person totally doing everything.
Right.
We have the three branches, blah, 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 blah. Right. Yeah, you get the idea. But the thing that I find interesting about that is that's not the only reference to three in this. We've got the third eye, which I just found an interesting connection, because then we also have a very famous group of three in the series that is basically aspects of Daedric Princes with the Tribunal, which is a very interesting tie-in. I don't know if that, because again, if we're going down the line of like levels of power, they're living gods and they're representations of Daedric Princes. And it's like, okay, well, and then we have the Daedric Prince tie-in to like these ancient beings.
Yeah.
So we've got kind of a long-standing groups of three that I noticed from this one, which I found interesting. Mm-hmm.
There's another three.
Let me, which three am I missing? This?
The thief, the warrior,
and the constellation. Mage. Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
There you go. So there's another reference to it. So there's a lot of threes in this. Uh-huh. And the other thing that I did find interesting when going through this was, let's see, where is the exact phrase? How the story unfolded before. So that seems like kind of almost like an innocuous, just whatever line. Mm-hmm. But having that tied into I don't know what you want to really refer to, this being that has a tie into water. Mm-hmm. And there's that kind of not at the forefront, but it's always kind of there, where water and the concept of water as a whole holds memories in the series, like, and it holds like history. I found that very interesting, that the being that is tied into water has this line about essentially remembering like stories and like history.
Yeah.
I found that an interesting thing. It's almost like, yep, it's still here. It's still kind of just in the background. Like, does water actually like maintain history, and we just don't really interact with that a lot, type of deal? So those were the two big pulls that I saw from this that I was like, oh, these are interesting.
Yeah, I think you're onto some of the key points here. Water and the aspect of water having memory, also symbolic of being wise, also being something that is not solid, not confined to its shape, able to bend and move around things. I think that connects to the sprightly liar, able to bend and move around things, but doesn't, doesn't really have its own form. It's always pretending to be a shape that it doesn't actually hold. But then,
well, the same way, it's like that whole idea is, it's very not, you know, there's not really any definites when it's, you know, such an amorphous thing. And the series is notorious for not committing to things.
That's like, true. That's true.
It's very, very interpretation based. So,
right.
A lie to one group could be the truth to somebody else.
That's true. That's true. I think that there's also a reason why this comes after the blue star, Nemo Lee. If Nemo Lee represents the chaotic potential of things and what happens or what reemerges during a dragon break,
yep,
then the Sheza Rana represents the ability to bend around whatever those whatever happens during that moment and begin to solidify into future potential. So calming moments between storms. If the dragon breaks are the storms, these are the moments between where things start to coalesce and take form again.
Right, because you've got all the chaotic creation going on, and then every now and then you actually get what we play in the games and stuff.
Right. There's also where it talks about the various triumvirate roles to be retaken. And that, I think, is, so you talked about threes, but I think that is the thief, the mage, and the warrior. Those are the, if there's any sort of triumvirate role that the people or the beings of Tamriel take on, it's one of those three.
Yep.
And that's one of those three, the prisoner always takes the form of one of these triumvirate roles in order to then define the movement of reality into some new direction. And the water is what allows reality to kind of bend into that course.
I like that. And see, and it's funny, I didn't consider the constellations as my group of three. When where I went was to the tribunal. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at, like, you know, taking the form and stuff like that, my first thought was to them taking the form of, like, their aspect prior to them. Like, oh, well, you know, who do you go after? And it's like, which Daedric Prince do you represent? So it's interesting. I hadn't considered the kind of, like, constellation approach to then how it relates to the character. And I mean, everybody's... Yeah. Kind of related to that. That's how your tech trees are in the game and stuff like that.
Right.
That's how a lot of your skills are determined and stuff like along those lines. It's interesting. I like that. I like that idea.
Yeah. And there's also another aspect here where it talks about being in the shadow of like a light, until Azura opens the third eye, clarity, foresight, intuition. Azura's third eye is connected somehow to the sun, and there's this weird thing about like the god of the sun, which is weird because Magnus should be the hole in like that creates the Therius. Like, how is that they're a god of the sun? But there's something about Azura and the third eye and the sun shining light on top of this, and it's almost like as long as it's not too illuminated, as long as Sheza Rana isn't too illuminated, she can imbue the future of reality to kind of bend and deal with whatever chaotic things influence its course. But when that is revealed, she's a shadow. She disappears. It's like it becomes solidified or something.
It's also interesting just because, again, it's Azura they picked, and Azura's realm is Moonshadow, mm-hmm. which you're dealing with the dawn and the dusk, and like besides the few actual descriptions of seeing it where it's like, oh, it's so beautiful, I'm blind type of thing, which is a little, it is just interesting since her realm kind of has to do with what you can see and what's in shadow. It's an interesting aspect because you can't have that without a form of light, i.e. the sun in this situation. So
right, the two kind of go together. So there's something else going on there. Daylight's vitality, peace and tranquility, harmony and balance, there's creativity, fuel, like there are these key words that kind of have something to do with empowering Tamriel to kind of work in the way it does. There's something about that. And water is necessary for life. If you can also think of it from that side.
Yeah, that's true. You're not getting very far if you can't have water.
Right, right. All right, so let's move on to the third one. Londa Vera, the green star, the blank of Earth, the space.
Sure, space is fine. It's dot, 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 dot most dot, of the dot, time. But right. Other times it's just like an extended amount of spaces.
Right, the space of the starry heart. When Magnus drew up his plans, for all that would be space, he sought to create something he could finally space. A perfect being, born of light within love. He drew upon all of space. The beauty of Nir, the eyes of Azura, the smile of Mara, the body of Debella, the wings of Kinnereth, the will of Boethia, the mystery of Vermina, the wisdom of Mephala, the determination of Namira, and from space, faded forge, Londa Vera emerged with a cry that echoed space endless ages. So divergent was her birth that she never truly formed, but the aspects of her being scattered across the Aurebus and broke upon space. She is everywhere and nowhere, the feminine power of magic that allowed the Mundus to exist despite the impossibility of it all. This seems really cool. There's something like the references to all of these this Frankensteinian thing that Magnus was piecing together that then didn't fully get finished and then got dispersed across what I would assume is, you know, reality itself.
Right. It's just this like half cooked idea that it's like, gotta let it go. And then it's just kind of like, let's see what we get by throwing it out there. And that's might explain why we get some pretty diverse everything in this series.
Yeah. So I have a theory about this one. I think I've got a sense of this. Magnus, in maybe one of the reasons why Magnus was decided to leave, and I think we can define that this might be a thing, is that things didn't go to plan. As they usually don't. And so he decided, like, okay, I'm out, left. And this is one of the things that remained, was this idea of the creation of something that would be born of light within love, something that would be perfect, a perfect being. And that perfect being didn't coalesce completely. And then got dispersed into existence. And what it imbued existence with were these aspects that were inspired by all of these other powerful beings. So the reason why there is beauty in Nirn is because of this. The reason why there is a smile, a joy. The reason why there is
a little aspect of each of these beings kind of filtered into what we see in the series as like existence.
Right. And also every creature, every mortal being has some aspects of these things. A body, a will. There's mystery, there's wisdom, there's determination. There are all these aspects in the creatures that exist because that's where this came from. They wouldn't have those aspects if they didn't come from somewhere. And so this became, in some ways, the same way that like the bones of reality were created physically from something that imbued the world with, you know, dirt and air and water and things like that. Like they came from the earth bones or whatever else, right? In this sense, these aspects, these qualities, especially of these mortal beings, came from somewhere. They came from Londa Vera, who is the green star of the earth. These are aspects that are the earth imbues the living things with.
Right. That's and that if you're going to make. Yeah, no, for sure. And if you're going to make a tie to, because again, there are nonsensical amounts of parallels to real life from the series, as everybody well knows, in all sorts of different ways. So the fact that, you know, we've got the green star of the Earth, which is interesting that they refer to it as Earth, as like this concept, as opposed to Earth as a literal Earth planet.
Really, like Earth as in like the ground, the stuff
I know.
Of creation.
I do find it funny like that that's just like a, it's an interchangeable word, because to your point, people refer to dirt as Earth.
Right.
Like, it is interesting because it's like, well, hypothetically, I wouldn't think they would know what Earth is, but I think, like, you know what? It's like
it's
Earth
that,
as in
it's
like
that version of the word, not the planet version of the word.
Exactly. Right. But it's like, the point I was making is that this is very, very representative of what you would picture in a lot of cultures of real, you know, everyday life as Mother Earth. It's like this, mm-hmm. this is like your forest spirit, like type of deal.
Yeah.
It kind of like ties into that, and it makes sense in that realm, because it's like, well, yeah, this is what creates, and this is what
the foundation
allows
of
life to grow.
Right. The foundation of life, light within love, like that spirit that creates life, and life has these qualities. You know, life can be mysterious, life can be wise, life can have physical form like a body, it can have wings, it can have eyes, it can have smile, like it can have beauty, like these are all aspects of life. So Mondavira is the primordial thing that imbued all of existence with those qualities. So there you go. I think that one's pretty straightforward. If you have a different perception on this, a different theory, then let us know, because none of this is hard and fast, because I haven't seen anywhere where this stuff is confirmed definitely. So all of it is like everything we have is right here. So it's all interpretation after that.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, number four. I figured we'll just get through all five of these. We'll do the mid-break. We'll do we'll thank the patrons and all that, and then we'll do the random page, and we'll wrap it up. So we'll put that at the end. I've been putting that at the end of my other podcast lately, because it allows us to just kind of get through all the stuff without a break.
Yeah, sure.
So, all right, let's talk about number four. Valia Shah, the orange star, the blank of fire, the burning bride, royalty among the scions of Magnus. The most loved of all wayward star orphans. Valia preached patience and compassion during the War of Blank. Yet in the mean, she was tasked with the most difficult mission of all. Blank burst through the firmament, scattering magicka across the newborn realm. So she traveled far to find each of them in turn, and she offered them a place among her kingdoms. Blank. To each who would say yes, she offered a piece of herself, until so many accepted that she herself began to fade away. If that light ever returned, there's a blank there, blank, if that light ever returned, blank, but so too, none can doubt the number of lights in the starry sky. So we've got this like fire thing going on with her.
Yeah.
What is your like initial gut reaction to this?
This one's a little interesting because I actually kind of struggled to like piece this together more than just like it's like again this almost just seems like, and it mentions it at the beginning, but it just kind of seems like this is the way that magicka was brought to the world. And yeah. and like, okay, this is essentially Magnus piecing out, and oh, here's the extra, here's some whoops that got left behind type of thing.
Right. I mean, they're all basically the whoops that got left behind in some way. Right.
And it's like this one yeah. almost specifically is just the like, well, my whoops, I guess I should spread it around so that everybody gets yeah. a little. Like,
well, the nature of fire, fair share. The nature of fire is that it spreads. Right?
That's true.
Fire yeah, yeah. spreads.
Fire itself spreads, yeah. sure.
If you go to the end of it, it says, none can doubt the number of lights in the starry sky. If the holes in the sky are places where the magicka comes through, they're holes to Aetherius, then maybe Valia Shah burned those holes into the sky to allow more magicka to come through. We also know that the amount of magicka in the world has been dispersed and is lesser than it previously was, that the world has declined, is less magical than it was at one time. And that's because the magicka has been divided up across all of these beings who can try to utilize that power for themselves. It's kind of this fundamental energy underneath existence that gets spread around. It's the reason why, you know, sorcerers can exist and cast magic spells and people can study magic, but it's also kind of this burning power underneath everything. That's my interpretation.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see that for sure.
Yeah, so I think this was pretty clear, is that, you know, Valia Shah is that magicka that got spread around everywhere. Yeah. But it's the beginning part is probably the most obscure. Royalty among the scions of Magnus. So that would mean that she is very close, very powerful and very close to Magnus, being like one of the most royal of the scions. And we know Magnus is magicka, right? So that makes sense that Valia Shah would be tied most closely to magicka. The most loved of all wayward star orphans. You know, magicka is very important in this universe.
For sure.
Valia preached patience and compassion during the war of... I'm thinking that's the war that was very, very early on, the one that got Lorcan killed.
Sure.
I think that's like that has to do with conflict, like somewhere early on, whether it's the death of Lorcan or it's the even earlier in existence. I'm not sure, but I'd have to think about that for a while.
I could see that. I don't necessarily know that it's intent. I could see that as a potential. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I think there might be something there. I'm not sure that it makes sense to do a war that was later and or among mortals. I think this is a war among cosmic beings. And then it goes into she decided to burst through the firmament, scattering magicka across the newborn realm very early on. That war would have had to be before the realm was born. So then you have the rest of it. So I think that ties pretty closely to how magicka got all over the place and how anybody can utilize it and how it's kind of underlying existence in some very foundational way, but it's not as powerful as it once was.
Right, right, right. Yeah, so. No, I can see that. And you know, being close to Magnus as kind of referenced it, like you mentioned at the beginning, maybe that's why this one was kind of trusted to distribute it, because it was yeah. done correctly. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, it doesn't necessarily need to be equal, but like, okay, distribute it in a way that makes sense to the world and the creation.
Right. And then this idea that like she herself began to fade away, like she was
right.
like imbuing things. We talk about the Aedra having imbued reality with themselves.
Right. I was going to say giving of yourself to the point where it's like, okay, well, assuming there is a finite amount of thing, mm-hmm. the more you give of the thing, the less of the thing there is.
Yeah, and Magnus would have originally been classified as an Aedra before he noped out. So these sure. being the daughters of Magnus, aspects of Magnus that have poured themselves into reality makes sense, right?
Right, right.
All right, so number five, Unala C, or S-E. So UNALA-SE, Unala C, I think. The yellow star, the blank of air, scion of space, of gap, not space itself, but like of space.
Yeah, I know, that's an
space
awkward,
unyielding space, sounded space like maybe space. It was a thing, right? Yeah. Scion of gap unyielding, to brace her sisters along the firmament and teach them to be immovable blank, the unstars came. And still she taught them to be undevourable. Unala Si taught all the orphans the ways of the word, the blade, and the sign. Space. They watched as black bile swept across the land like a sickened sea, not yet knowing that their space the tragic prince of Lig space, and the darkness within him poured forth from the wound, taking a life of its own in the realm space. The dark encircled even the Elden King of Grot, who seemed so steadfast space, drank of the dark and became something more space. After her fall, a black tree of poison and death space, she showed us that which we were meant to see. Space watches still, hoping we will remember love. This one feels very different from the others to me.
Yes, this just has a different feel to it altogether. So I would kind of agree with you on that one.
Yeah. Weather Dragon chat says Black Bile is definitely the void pouring from Lorcan. I think it has something to do with the void. I think that.
Yep. I would very much agree with that. 100%.
Tragic Prince of Lig.
Yeah.
Like the bowels of Lig being connected to this like dark void like place. Then we have the Elden King of Grot. The Elden King of Grot is Ifrei. Ifrei is connected right. to the Bosmer. The Bosmer are connected to the Ooze.
I was about to say, you're pulling an Ooze connection where it's like you go back to that primordial Ooze creation.
Right, right. So I think that there's this connection here between the existence that was being created and this Ooze version. You know, the what's the word? The two aspects of reality coming from order and chaos, this Anu and Padme kind of thing, right?
Yeah, you have the yin and the yang, and you've right. got like these two parts that make the whole, and you can't really fundamentally have an understanding of one without its opposite. Like,
right.
Light doesn't hold meaning if you don't know what darkness is. Like,
exactly. Also, there's the beginning of this says, to brace her sisters along the firmament and teach them to be immovable. Stars themselves, if they're holes in this gap, and these are all right. stars, then they're not really a thing. But she's teaching her sisters to be a thing, to be immovable. And then the unstars came. Unstars is one of those like Kirk Brideian words that gets used every so often, right? What if right. unstars are planets?
Right. Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah. And unstars wouldn't be like stationary the same way.
Right. So like the Aedra became planets. There are still lights in the sky, but they are made of something that retains its form and is unchanging, is solid. So she taught her sisters to be like these other Aedra. In fact, maybe the other Aedra are some of her sisters. Maybe there's some connection there because they are all in some ways Aedric. So the idea that you could create this form out of nothing comes from Unala Se, but then you have the darkness that poured forth and potentially corrupted the creation, the solidness of these planets, of these places, and then you have that combination and then the spill out of that into Nirn and, you know, the poisoning of trees and death and the fact that death exists and all of these things. So you have this kind of corrupted existence. It's not exactly what it was originally planned to be. It has a dark side.
Sure. And it's the same way that like if we're again, I just pull it back a little bit to the void idea where it's like the void spilling in type of thing. I find an interesting idea on that note because it's one of these things where you if you want to look at like a in-game thing you participate in that tends to be a nefarious group. You have, you know, the Dark Brotherhood
yeah.
sending people back to the void type of thing. And it's a very, very tangible thing that you even play in game. I like that it's just like that's considered more of like a nefarious dealing, but it's like it's all part of the cycle that happens. Right. And they just are sort of a perpetuator of said cycle.
Right.
Yes, okay, they tend to make them a little blood-crazed in-game, and I think they're kind of ridiculous, but people love them. Sure. That's totally fine.
But they are a piece of existence. They are a part of the way the world works.
And it perpetuates the flow of life. Like, that's like one of the things they do, so.
Right, yeah, and Weather Dragon says, we know Unstars glow like stars, but they do not emit virulence. This idea that, like, and when you look in the night sky, like the brightest star in our sky is actually Venus. It's a planet.
Right.
Until we had, you know, the tools to see these things up close, we just kind of assumed it was a star and it moved a little bit different from the rest of the stars. So that idea sure. that like the unstars can still shine, but they don't emit, they reflect, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's so, yeah. Like we said, these ones are weird. And I'll be very curious if anybody would like to chime in with their thoughts on any of this.
Yeah.
These are the ones that I'm like, I really like hearing different interpretations of these, so don't hesitate to do so.
Yeah, definitely. If you're watching the YouTube, comment on this, jump on it.
Yeah, Discord. I was going to say, I've been enjoying chat, yeah. Throwing out different ideas, some of which I did not even consider, some of which I'm like, somebody said something that I was thinking, so yeah. Vindication.
Yeah, so we've got more to come to kind of tease it. On the next episode, we're going to talk about zero lig. Very interesting. Zero lig. The word lig is part of Zero Lig's name. Merid Nunda, also very interesting, because Merid Nunda is Meridia, which really puts the Daedric Princes kind of in a different perspective here. And then there's Iana Lore, and then of course the blank in her name. We don't know what Ithilia's original name was, but it's probably something like Ithilia.
Yeah, super lame Nimic, or a Nimic we literally can't pronounce, like, right? Mehrunes Dagon. Like, when they said that in Battlespire, I'm like, yeah, it's a good thing this is a dialogue choice, because I could never say that many letters.
Yeah, it's gonna be something weird. So we got those coming up. We've already talked about Ithilia, but we'll talk about the other three in detail, and definitely let us know your
two.
Yeah, that'll be volume
so that,
two.
That was our conclusion of those are the ones from volume one. So yeah,
that's volume one. All right, well, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna be back to thank our patrons, and then we're gonna have our random page, so don't go anywhere.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
So if you like what we do and you want to get cool stuff, head over to patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. I put up a bunch of new t-shirts recently, just last month, for patrons who are at the tier where you get t-shirts every 3 months. There's stickers of those same things at that tier. You can get ad-free episodes if you'd like to listen to us on the audio platforms or wherever. Also, you get ads on YouTube, so if you'd rather listen without ads, you can do that. And then also, I just wanted to let you know, I've been designing regular t-shirts, non-patron specific t-shirts. The t-shirts on Patreon you can't get anywhere else, but our merch store now has some new t-shirts, like Visit Skyrim, Visit Morrowind.
I was about to say, so as the not artistic one of the two of us, where I do not do the shirt designs, I really like those, because you sent them to me before you put them live, and we're like, what do you think? And I was like, these are really funny, I like these.
Yeah, so. I need to pull up an example. So for
public
people,
kudos, because I enjoyed these.
here let me pull up an example. I'll just put it on the screen so people can see it. Oh, it's so tiny, I'm gonna have to make it bigger. And it's transparent, because that's the transparency. Okay, so there you can see my face. Beautiful. Through it, there's Visit Skyrim. I just grabbed the thing right away. But there's a few different ones. I think the t-shirts look great. I'm gonna buy some for myself, actually. I'm gonna order some from my own store.
I know. Well, it's funny when you say that, because it's like, well, I mean, we need to pay somebody to make them. So, like,
right. Well, I designed them. Yeah. But like, they get printed.
You need to, like, to print them. Like, right. We don't do a print press.
Right.
And so we do technically buy them.
And to be honest, like, the people who print and distribute them make the bulk of it. Like, every shirt sure. that gets sold, we get like a dollar or something. Like,
I
priced it about as cheap as possible, just so like people can buy them and try to at least not have to spend.
But yeah, they're providing the materials and stuff.
You're right.
Providing the design. Right.
So I'm spending almost as much as you guys are on t-shirts. So there you go. Anyway, patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. We have to welcome our new patrons, Ira, Jack S, and Amanda H. Thank you for joining us. So glad that you are here. And I have to shout out our Daedric tier patrons. Blinding Vision, Hercene, Kiracy, Little Seizures, and Peter R. Thank you so much for your continued support. And to all 134 of our current active paid patrons, thank you so much. And there's more than just you, because there's a free tier. You can sign up for the free tier. You get notifications when things happen. And I'm thinking about doing some fun things for our free patrons that might be things that only our free patrons can actually get access to. So I'm brainstorming some stuff. So head over there if you want to just join for free and just be kind of part of the club. Also, if you want to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I can only see the reviews from the US, because the app I was using that brought all the reviews from everywhere together, no longer exists, and I haven't found a good replacement yet. But
yeah,
if you live somewhere else, it would still be very helpful. If you live in the US, I'll read it out on a future episode of the show. And you can also rate the show, you can comment on Spotify, you can give us 5 stars wherever. All of that stuff absolutely helps. So thank you to everybody for your support. We couldn't do this without you, and this is why we keep coming back, is because you guys are here. You make it worth it. So thank you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, just a shout out on that, we have almost 1,000 reviews on Spotify from what we can see in the US. So like, yeah, well, obviously we appreciate more stars because it lets us know you actually like what we do, but
yeah,
the fact that people take the time to actually even click that and just give us a rating is very nice. I like to just kind of mention that I do appreciate that when I see that, that you take the time out of your day to do that to help us out, regardless of what you think.
Even if you hate us, just give us a 5-star review.
Sure, whatever. I mean, I certainly appreciate the better reviews, but you got to be honest. So,
be honest. Or, but, you know, or
I appreciate
just,
you taking the time to do so.
Or if you hate our guts, just don't review.
Yeah, sure, that'd be great. In that case, I'd rather you didn't, but you got to do what you got to do.
Also, we currently have 315 ratings on the U.S. part of the Apple Store with a 4.9 average, which is insane. That is so cool.
Yeah,
so thank you to everyone.
I'm glad more of you like us than don't.
Yeah, me too. All right, so I hit the random button on the UESP. This is our random page. This one's so oftentimes we get weird ones, like this is a shoe that's in the corner of this location. You know, like,
I hope this is the most mundane one to match the weird episode we just did.
Actually, we did talk a lot about Magicka. I think this one makes a lot of sense to go with Magicka. So this is from Elder Scrolls Online. People, Naramo.
Oh.
I feel like we could do an entire episode on Naramo.
Right?
So if you don't know.
A character episode.
Yeah, if you don't know, I'm not going to read the entire thing because there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of quests.
No, this is literally enough to have an episode. So
absolutely. So this is just the synopsis at the top. Naramo is a high elf who is initially found outside a Dwemer ruin called Bzark.
You can't pronounce Bzark.
On Strass Makai. After you help him, he will join Captain Killeen's crew and participate in several quests in the Daggerfall Covenant questline. He can then later be found on his own personal adventure in various regions in the DLC. He owns a pet dwarven automaton named Clanker. So you fix his Clanker up, and then there's a whole quest line with that stuff. He shows up later. He's got this really fun personality. He's one of those fun recurring characters in ESO.
Yeah, no, he's a good recurring character.
Yeah, so there you go, Naramo. Maybe we should do an entire episode in the future on like just some of these fun recurring characters. I know we haven't done
a character dive in a while.
Right, we've done some of those and some of the companion ones, but we haven't done just like some of these other, I don't know, so like some of the fun little side characters that just kind of pop up here and there. Like,
yeah,
maybe a collection of those in one episode would be fun. So that's coming in the future. We've got more Star Orphans to talk about next week. And then I think after the week after that, we've got our patron chat. So that'll be on the 30th, the second to last day of the month this month. So if you'd like to join us for that, check out the Patreon. You can join us and we'll do that. So there you go. Lotus, any last thoughts, any last words?
No, not really. There's a new episode of Tales of Tamriel out. If you're interested in that, it's the other podcast I do with my co-host Arcaneer. But yeah, we kind of just dive into the update 45 that just got announced for Elder Scrolls Online, and that's really kind of all we covered that last episode because it's there was a lot of announcements to cover, so we didn't really go into too much else this last episode. A little more news oriented for that last show.
Yeah. ESO's been already making announcements and putting things on the PTR about stuff that they had teased about earlier.
Yeah,
some of the things they're working on.
It seemed like it was going to be a little farther down the line.
Yeah, but some of that stuff was already like ready to go.
Yep. So
yeah,
especially
like the rework stuff they've been doing of some of those early smaller areas. They look great.
Yep. I was a little hesitant because I didn't want them to overhaul and kind of kill some of my nostalgia of some of the older zones. But when the side-by-side, they just do a great job of like, or at least the ones they've showed, really just match the quality of the newer zones. Because again, there's a 10-year gap in some situations, or 9-year gap, I guess, in some situations. It matches the quality, but keeps the feel of how they used to be, which I definitely liked because that was the only thing I was a little curious about.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden they went from having like everything was on medium setting to now you can go to like ultra.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
That's what it feels like. It feels like, right. I don't have to play on medium settings anymore. I can play on ultra.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Fun.
Yeah. So that's cool. I've got my stuff. I've got the Lord of the Rings lorecast and the Fallout lorecast. If you want to go check out those shows, if you're into that stuff, and you can, wherever you're listening or watching this, you can look up those because they exist other places as well. Fingers crossed this time next week, we have an announcement about Oblivion Remake, because I so want to dive back into a nicer, newer refresh of that game.
Well, I heard that, yeah, there's, from the leaks and stuff like that, it's like Unreal 5. I'll be very curious to see it compared to, obviously, the stunning Sky Oblivion project that I'm very curious to see as well. Kind of ironic they would both pop up in the same year.
Yeah, it is kind of funny.
It's a little weird.
I think a lot of people, in some ways, it's kind of like, you know how there's, on like major city roads, you have a Starbucks on both sides of the road.
Sure.
A Starbucks on both sides of the road. I think it's kind of like that. Like, you're going to play one of them and then you're going to go, oh, I want to try the other one out. And
yeah.
So it's almost like there's the promotion of each is going to help the other, maybe?
Well, I would think so. And also, you'll have the console market, I assume you would get on.
Right, that's true.
The official launch, which wouldn't be feasible from the Sky Oblivion project.
Yeah, that would be very difficult to make that happen.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure that would work. But
that's true.
So yeah, it's I don't know. I'm definitely curious. One of the things I it's being reported more and more. So mm-hmm. I mean, there was the official Microsoft leak way back during all that buyout stuff that we saw. I do just find it a little interesting, not to discredit the fact that I think this might actually be a real thing. I've noticed a lot of the articles that I'm seeing that are talking about like new data or new information uncovered, blah, blah, blah. They're all just citing the same basic articles, like right. incestuously on themselves. And I'm like, well, you're all just, this is like three articles.
It's like a loop at this point.
Yes. Just, and I'm like, this is not, you're all just citing each other saying that you got this new information after talking to so-and-so. All you did was cite them. Like, it's the same three things being cited over and over again. Yeah. It's not new.
Yeah.
Not that I don't think that it's possible and / likely, just that I do find that kind of funny the more articles I see on
it. It's just the nature of the internet now. It's just how it all works. Everything's clickbait, and everybody all just jumps on the one thing that comes out and then says, hey, check this out. And it's like they didn't even do any research themselves. Screaming chat says, is Sky Oblivion going to show up the remake, though?
So
I don't know. That's a good question.
So that's kind of funny because... I mean, I don't know, but
well, one of the rumors,
I feel like the passion project of Sky Oblivion might, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be a little jarring because I think that might get more love than an official remake, honestly.
I think both are going to be better at different things. That's going to be my guess.
For sure.
Is that we're going to look at each of them, and some people are going to be like, no, I prefer this because of these reasons, or I prefer this because of these reasons. But also one of the things that was leaked about the remake is that it went from remaster to remake for a reason, that they improved a lot of stuff. And I know Sky Oblivion,
combat things.
Yeah. And some of the locations, some of the dialogue options, some of the ways quests play out, the diversity of dungeons, maybe some of that stuff. And I know Sky Oblivion is making improvements as well. So I think it'll be really interesting if they both are good but for different reasons. That's what I'm hoping. And so you can do one and you can be like, oh, I really enjoy this aspect of this one, and then you can do another and be like, oh, I really like this other thing that this one is doing, and then you could even compare and contrast the two. So
it
should be a lot of fun. You know, who knows, maybe this time next year we'll probably have covered a lot of this stuff, hopefully, if they both are a thing and they actually release. So we'll see. But thank you everybody for being here. We'll be back next week, and until then, I don't know, look up to the stars and realize that maybe that's where all the magic comes from, and your actual very existence is dependent on those stars. So there you go.
Don't stare at the sun.
But don't stare at the sun. That's a bad idea. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Hey,
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log in to your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.